He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right, Bud Jeffries, welcome to Beyond the Bend.
Happy to be here, man.
Well, you're a lot of people's gateway into steel bending. There's been a number of people that I've spoke to that you were the first person they saw bend some steel. So I want to find out who was the first person that you saw bend a piece of steel, if you can take me back.
Probably somebody. It would have to have been somebody in Powerlifting USA back 100 years ago when that was a magazine and prior to the internet and all of that stuff. So like I got into the old time strongman and professional strongman stuff in this weird little way. And I hadn't seen anybody. Those were probably the guys, first guys I'd seen pictures of. Maybe, you know, when they had the steel bending in the World's Strongest Man, something. And I think I saw pictures of that and then a few other people. And then later on, I'd seen a few people do some stuff at churches and that kind of thing. And that's actually how I fell into it. So I was a power lifter and had gone to the USPF team nationals and different stuff or whatever. And then I ended up at the University of Florida as a football player. And I played football for a year there, but while I had literally a career-ending football injury, I actually broke my shoulder joint in a freak hit in the middle of a practice one on a Monday night. And it just literally broke a chip out of the back of your ball. You should be a ball and socket. And they thought it was just dislocated. And then I went back like 2 weeks later and then it dislocated again. And what it did is it left a hole for my bone to just literally pop out. So I went to the end of the year and they had this, I took what's called an arthrogram. And this is funny. So they wanted to put me in an MRI, but back then this would be 1991. So, 92 actually when I did that, but 91, 92 year, they didn't have an open scan MRI. All they had was a tube. And I actually hung on the tubes on both sides. Like they were rolling me in this conveyor belt, like started to smoke because it's trying to shove me in the tube and I can't get it. And so they find out anyway that my shoulder joint's broken and that kind of just took football completely away. But for me, it was kind of a $1 million injury. I call it that because it didn't affect anything else I did strength-wise. And after 6 months or so, my arm got back to kind of normal. Like the only thing it ever affected is if it was 300 pounds of me running into 300 pounds of another guy and crashing into each other, and that would pop my shoulder out. But I could press and I could lift and bend and all kind of stuff. And so out of that, in the spring of that next year, I was in Gainesville still, and my mom kind of hooked me up with this guy at a church, and they were hosting Bill Glass Prison Ministries, who was a guy who he would set up for like a week at a place, and he would bring all these amazing people, and everybody would have their own night, and they would do a crusade for the whole night. And every day during the day, they drive to every prison they could get to within like 100-mile radius, any direction, and they would do that. Anyway, they always had a strong man who came with them. And it was the one who came with them that year was Anthony Clark. I don't know if you may or may not know, because he probably passed away before you got into this, but Anthony Clark was first guy to bench press 800 pounds. Like 5'6 and about 350. And like just looking at barrel with a chest, he's the first guy I ever saw who had legit 25 inch arms. It was just like it was like psychotic, like you couldn't. Anyway, they asked me to do a promo for him, and because like the guy knew me and knew I had been lifting and knew I had already been a national champion and other stuff or whatever, and he's like, hey, listen, man, this guy's coming and I know you do some of the same things, and why don't you see if you can build up some interest for us with our people or whatever. So like, you know, again, pre-internet days. So like I was looking in books and trying to scan old copies and calling people and trying to scan copies of Powerlifting USA. And I saw some long bar bending. So I went to and I didn't know, I had no idea what I was doing. I was copying what I was seeing them do. And actually, if you look at most of that old World's Strongest Man stuff, they're actually using like the worst technique you could possibly use to bend a long bar. Like they don't know any better because they just sprung that event on them. They didn't tell anybody, you know, ahead of time. So I went to a hardware store, found some steel, way overpaid for it, knowing what I know now, and practiced a couple of times and bent a couple bars. Then I went on stage like a week later and talked for 10 minutes and did some deadlifts. And I think I broke a couple of boards and bent a long bar. And that was my first thing there. And then later on, I started to see some of the, you know, as I went and I got the idea I was going to have a career, that really like sparked my interest in speaking to people and using this thing that I had, and I could, you know, maybe have a career doing this or whatever. And later on, I started to see other benders and guys like Dennis Rogers.
Yeah.
And other people bending short nails. And then Brett Jones actually was an RKC guy, a Russian kettlebell guy. They invited me up to their certification, and I went and hung out with those guys, Pavel and those guys. And Brett was really into short bending. So Brett's the first guy who actually showed me any kind of short bending up close. And I just from there decided, you know what, I'm going to figure out everything we can do. And you know, at that time we had a little more information share than there was in the early days, where it was only if you happened to know somebody who was doing it, and nobody was doing it. And what they were doing, with the exception of like, okay, back in that time period, Dennis Rogers, John Brookfield, couple of guys in that era were doing some legit bending, but nobody else. This was prior to the, you know, well, when I started, it was right in when the Iron Mind stuff came out and that their bending pads and their Red Nail and all that stuff. And then it was in the early days of that, but then like prior to those days, there was only 2, 3, 4 cats doing it. You know, the guy in Michigan, Don Larkin, and those other dudes were. There was a few Slim Farman, Slim the Hammerman. There were a few dudes still, you know, doing the hardcore bending, but very, very few people. And then it caught on again like wildfire once Iron Mind, those guys got involved. And
that
kind of pushed me to that. And then after about that time period is when my performing career really, really took. Really, I started to get a lot, you know, do a lot of stuff or whatever. And so that made for great show stuff, and which is ridiculous. Like, even my parents. Like, yeah, I'll tell you how powerful steel bending is. Dude, my parents watched me lift everything in the world, watched me win a world championship for years and years and years and years, knew I had squatted 1,000 pounds, and they were more proud of them, the little 60-penny nails and 12-inch spikes and stuff. That, like, they kept them on a mantelpiece, and they'd be showing people and stuff all the time. And I'm like, dude, that, like, I get it. That's cool. But, like, the, you know, and they're lay people as far as that this kind of thing. They don't know the difference between, you know, like, I know cats who can bend stuff that, like, you know, you can't bend with a truck. That's really how I first got into bending, that kind of little foray. And I went for years bending long bars and finding different ways to bend them and playing with it until I got into some bigger bars and learned how to do it. And then really got into some short bending and then everything else, scrolling and all that stuff.
Yeah, I love, I mean, you know, taking it back to coming from grappling, like, I really love like all the different facets to steel bending. You know, I got in because of exposure to the Red Nail and Iron Mind, like most people do. But, you know, recently I've really been liking the mid to long bars and getting into a little scrolling and stuff. I like that within this world, there's so many different ways to do it, and it works you out in so many different ways. Like, just the short steel is kind of like a quick battle, but then I'm doing like, I started with a 36-inch bar, and now I'm chopping it down, trying to get to like 24 inches, and that's like a whole other puzzle. It's so cool, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you and I were talking prior to the cast about this a little bit. I think steel bending is one of the best things you can do to train for jiu-jitsu and train for grappling. I actually think short bending and scrolling, those combinations are the best for those things, because it's kind of like you said. Now, the short bending, whatever kind you do, is hand strength, and it's usually a shorter battle, but it's hand strength. But that's so incredibly important, especially for gi grappling. But then scrolling, which is really mostly my favorite thing, really, is a long, intense, multi-directional. You know, you really find leverage points in all kind of different ways and different directions, and you just—it's kind of like learning to grapple and learning jiu-jitsu and learning leverage and learning, you know, I push this way, pull that way, how do I solve this problem? Where can I go from here? And you can spend, man, you get a hard piece of steel 10, 20 foot long, you can spend an hour hammering that bad boy, and it comes out awesome, and you've had a tremendous full body workout every possible direction, and core strength especially, which is a huge thing in that, and that's a big...
Yeah, it's so cool. I agree for sure. And it's funny, as you said about your parents, you know, it's like the what the layperson respects and thinks is impressive can be so far from what is actually hard. Yeah. It was like,
and it's
so
not I've been, that, you know, whatever level, it's not that bending a 60 penny nail or a 12 inch spike, but you know, which we would consider as benders the basics of, you know, that's the basic short bend, that's the basic, you know, braced bend. You know, maybe I don't really know what you half inch or 5/8 inch bar might be, a basic long bend, that kind of thing. You know, but that nail is so easy to mentally understand exactly what that strength is, and so few cats can do it, because you get I literally have handed them nails to thousands of people over the course of my career doing shows or whatever. I almost always open, especially my school shows, with a bending a 60 penny nail. And I kind of give them the story of that's kind of a basics of strongman, and that's what they did. And they did this because people could understand that. People could understand it. That's what the old time strongman guys do. Like, I could walk up with a dumbbell, and you won't know the difference if you're not educated into this. You won't know the difference between a 100 pound dumbbell and 200 pound dumbbell.
Yeah.
Nope. But if I grab a big old thick nail, you get immediately that that's not supposed to bend. That is a legitimate piece of strength, or like, okay, one of the things I always did is I pressed somebody overhead with one arm in a show, and that was analogous to the dumbbell thing. I could pick the biggest dumbbell in the world, and they'd be like, okay, it's a cool dumbbell. But if I grab your teacher, you know, your fourth grade teacher, and pick her up and press her overhead, you get, number one, I don't know her, I can't fake this, and that's a grown-up human that he just lifted overhead.
Yeah.
You know, which is more, for a lay person, not a lifter, is at least more impressive than, you know, than that kind of thing. And if you get a good, reasonably tough 60 penny nail, you can hand it to just about anybody.
Oh yeah.
And even big strong guy. And I've seen some big old monster strong guys nearly have a aneurysm because they, you know, trying the first time, they don't realize it takes some training for most people to learn to walk up and just bend one. You don't, you know, unless you get some super easy one, you don't gonna walk up and bend a reasonably hard 60 the first day. I don't know a single person who's done that.
Yeah, not without any little pointers from the person that knows what they're doing, you know. Right. Like, I've brought a couple of nails to gather barbecues and stuff this summer, right, and you know, I toss it to them, and they're holding it way out in front of them. Mm-hmm. They can't even get it to budge, and I, you know, these are reasonably strong guys, whatever, and I just, with a couple critiques, then they can usually get it moving a little bit, you know. It's like, it's interesting. There is some technique to it. It's not just sheer brute force, you know.
Well, and people ask me that all the time, and let me tell you how I answer that, because kids today, if you do shows, and adults are super jaded about this kind of thing, and you're going to have people call you a fake or a magician or say it's a trick. And I explain it to them like this. This is no more a trick than if I told you to lift a box by using your legs and putting the box right next to you and picking it up, versus if I told you to put that box 2 foot away and pick it up with terrible leverage. It's no more a trick than that. The techniques of bending are simple techniques. They're not, it's not some complicated magic thing where you pop and it, you know, there's no fake, there's no sleight of hand. Okay, yeah, it makes a difference if you stay close to your body. It makes a difference if you, you know, those things or whatever. But that's the same thing if I walked up and picked up a 300-pound rock, and, you know, you're not going to do that without some basic biomechanics. It's really not even any special technique. It's just solid biomechanics is what it is.
That's true.
And they don't get that. Now, a lot of people don't have decent biomechanics at anything, which is why you see guys do this, hold it way out here, and don't – you know, they don't realize that, like, that's a specialized feat to bend it straight or to keep it away from the body. That's an even more specialized type of bending than just regular, you know, bending. And they don't get that. But like that's a thing. And like, I had to tell you a story about my son doing that, because, you know, and you were talking about taking nails and stuff to gatherings or whatever and that kind of thing. And he said this, he's like, dude, if you want to impress a girl, hand her one of those. He's like, she won't remember your name, but she'll remember the guy who bent that. Or if you want to impress her dad, he'll remember the cat, the guy who walked in his living room and handed him a nail he just folded in half. And did, you know, and he used to shoot with these old guys all the time, and they thought he was like a trick pony. Like, they saw him do it a couple of times. They're like, come here, you got to do this for everybody. And so, like, he ended up doing this. And I'll tell you the thing about old-time strongman and magician, because he grew up with me, and everybody in the world who's an old-time strongman considered he was like his uncle. You know, and he was learning to bend stuff, spoons and stuff, at like 7 and 8 years old. And he could bend a 60 penny nail at 13 and a red nail at 15. And he was, they took him to a charity shoot, and it's a high dollar charity shoot, and all these fancy guys, and it's a lot of money, and there's an open bar flowing around back and forth. And these old guys call him over, and they're like, "Hey man, come here and show my buddy this." And the one guy in the bar gets belligerent about it and pokes him and says, "Oh, you're just a magician. That's a fake." And he's like, "Don't call me a magician. Don't do it." Anyway, and then he cons the guy into finger wrestling him, into doing German finger wrestling, which I don't know if you know what that is, but that's a where you keep your arm straight and you lock your middle fingers and you twist
against
each other. And the guy's like, "I don't care how you do this, no matter what you show me, there's some trick to what you're doing." He's like, "Well, all right, then wrestle me, because there's no trick to that." And the guy like says, "Okay." And the guy like just cranks, and it doesn't even move his hand. And then he's like, "You sure you want to call me a magician?" And then goes pop and breaks his finger.
Oh, wow.
But then he feels bad. He like picks him up. He's like, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break your finger, old man. You didn't, you know." But people are going to call you that. They're going to get, you know, "Oh, it's a trick. It's a fake," or whatever. No, it's not. You can do anything you want with this nail. Unless you have the hand strength to do it, it doesn't work.
Yep.
And people do get that. Most people will be not cool about it, and they'll get that. Like, you know, hey, that cat has some hands, and we're not going to, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, when I first tore a deck of cards, I just threw a picture of me holding the two pieces of the cards up on Facebook or whatever. And everybody was like, "Oh, that's so cool, blah, blah, blah." But one person messaged me and was like, "I got to see this. I don't believe it." And I was like, all right. And I just got another deck, and I sent him a video of me taking it out of the box and tearing the whole thing. Right. It's just hard, you know. It's, I'd like to hear your take on it, because it's sort of your whole thing is like the belief behind doing this stuff, right? Like, you got to believe you can do it. You can't go into these things, even though it does take strength and it does take technique and good sense of biomechanics. There's got to be belief behind it, right?
That's the biggest part of all strength, but steel bending, even probably specifically, or a lot of the old time strongman feats, are very against what people think it. Okay, it's exactly what I said. People see that nail, they know that nail is not supposed to bend. If they see you lift a barbell, they know that barbell is supposed to be lifted. And to some extent, most people have that in their mind, okay? Now, maybe they're trying a weight they haven't tried before, and they have a doubt, and that kills their lift or that kind of thing, but they know that they're doing something that's supposed to happen. But when you bend steel, that's not – we're conditioned to believe that, and steel's made not to bend. That's its whole purpose. And you have to have that conquering belief is the entire thing. I believe that is so strong, it engages things in your mind and your body and the subtle energy around your body that you don't even get. And you're able to do things when your belief is truly, truly, like almost a hypnotic level convinced, you can do stuff you don't never thought possible. And it's a steel bending is also probably one of the best incremental ways to increase your belief in yourself. Because you know, so maybe you see somebody who bends one, and you're like, "Wow, I want to try that. I don't know if I could do it." But then you get a little success under your belt, and maybe you bend your first 60 penny nail, or you bend that. And now you're like, "Well, crap, this really is about training and how I think and how I believe in myself and what I do." And you watch people fail. I've taught people to do bend steel at seminars multiple times all around the country. And you can see when they believe or don't believe by how their body moves and how they attack something. And you can also see when the light switches on for them to have some belief. Like if you let them try and then you make an adjustment in their technique, okay, change this, stand here, put this arm a little out like that, or move it around here, grab here. And all of a sudden that steel goes from, you know, there to, they get a little success. And then all of a sudden they're like, click the light. Oh my, I absolutely can do. And a lot of the old time strongman feats are really very, very like that. I'll tell you one that's 100% on belief, 100% on the belief you can do it, is driving a nail through a board.
Yeah.
Much or more so than steel bending, because most people, rational people, strong guys or whatever, pull back at the last second because they don't believe they can do it, and they will, and they do believe they'll get hurt. And if you conquer those two things, all of a sudden you can do things you never thought possible. And once you start to click that mindset, that could carry on into your life. You know, that makes you the guy who, you know what, maybe steel bending was my entry into the world of true self-belief, but now I can go on and finish school. Now I can do that music or that album, or I can do the job, or I can make something. I can write this. I can do that. I can ask that girl out. I can make something. Dude, there, all life is incremental mental training, all of life. So, and I think physical training and steel bending is one, because steel bending above many, many types of physical training requires an intense concentration. You have to be focused and blocking other stuff out on what's going on when you're bending at your toughest level. You know, yep. If you're screwing around with an audience and bending easy stuff, that's one thing. But if you're really, really locking down on that one thing, okay, it's kind of like this. I feel like this kind of thing is a meditative mental moment, a meditative mental training. So like, if you look at the old time Shaolin guys or whatever, the reason they started to physically train was because they could not mentally sustain the energy to do the meditation that they wanted to do. So they had to be in better shape to be able to do it. But I think they found, and what I found is this, if you do something incredibly physically hard, you will automatically connect to the state that most people try to meditate their way into for 3 hours at a time. You can do it in 30 seconds. If you put yourself in a position where it's that hard, like I tell people, put the heaviest thing you can pick up on your shoulders in a power rack, pick it up for 4 inches and hold it there for 30 seconds. I promise you, you will reach that state in 30 seconds. You will not think about everything else will go blank. Everything else will go away. You will be solely focused on what's going on. And steel bending is very much like that. As I think even at the top ends of it, you learn to apply not only your mind, your body, the right biomechanics, the body hardening, the strength of an individual technique, that self-belief. And that self-belief starts to provoke adrenaline control, adrenaline dump, psyching, the ability to psych yourself, the ability to stay calm while you're psyched because you over-psych, you screw things up, the ability to stay focused while you're doing it, even the ability for, like I've said this in a lot of the stuff I've written, that we have 7 or 8 channels of power and we're like a V8 engine with 8 cylinders, and there's technical ability and muscular strength and tendon and ligament and bone and core strength and mental acuity and focus and subtle energy and all of those things. And you'll always be your strongest when all of that's firing together, when all of that's the same direction. It's not, you know, a lot of people, that's one of the steps they really miss in top end strength, is they get good technique, they get physically strong, they get some decent foundational. I don't think most people do a lot. I think steel bending does a lot for tendons and bone and ligament that most people don't ever get. I think that's a huge thing that it really does for you that most people don't get in normal training. I think you're held back because your foundation of the chassis that you're working with is not as tough as it should be, because most people don't do the training to make that part as strong as possible. And steel bending is one of the great ways to do that. But that subtle energy, that application of not just physical strength, correct technique, true focus, but I'm literally focusing to the point that I'm electrifying the air around me, that I'm literally pulling into the moment of that steel bends. I'm literally manipulating the physics of the moment to make it happen.
Yeah.
And that's like the top end of that stuff. And the ability to do it quickly, which I think if you watch people – yeah, I don't know if you've ever been here, but I know you've been around fighting or jiu-jitsu, so I know you've seen people get, you know, amped up and excited or whatever. But if you ever watch a real hardcore powerlifting group, and guys will spend just, you know, several minutes, if not 15 minutes, just getting ready for this one lift, and it's super aggressive, and it looks like a rock concert on acid with, you know, a bunch of Hell's Angels slapping the crap out of each other about for this guy to go out and lift. But steel bending doesn't flow that same way. It can be that same initial hit with a simple bend, but if it's a long extended bend where you got to hit it and hit it and hit it and go, or especially if it's something you do on stage. So you can't do that on stage. If you're on stage, you can't spend 20 minutes getting, you know, and growling like a gorilla. And if you're a speaker, you can't do that, be exhausted from your thing, and then say, all right, everybody take an intermission for 10 minutes. I got to catch my breath. You got to go right back to speaking. And that's something I found out, is being able to not only just focus all of those channels I talked about, but being able to focus them quickly without an excess of burned energy in another direction, which I think is good to learn that kind of powerlifting psyching. That's a great way intro into that kind of meditative, powerful mental state. But the top end of that is a much calmer, faster access. Like, I'll tell you where I really picked that up is I picked it up in doing shows. In a 3-year period, I did 1,000 shows.
Wow.
I did 2 a day, 5 days a week, 9 months of the year following a school tour. Whoa. So like I was speaking at 2 schools a day, Monday through Friday, literally the entire 9 months of the American school year, which adds up to 300 and 350, depending on the year, the amount of actual shows. Okay. So if you do 4 shows in a day, you can't blow the whole world apart with rah. Nobody can sustain it. And I watched Dennis Rodgers do this a bunch of times, and he had a ton of experience. He's a close friend. He had a ton of experience in speaking at churches and doing that kind of thing and he's a single performer. He carries the whole show. It's not a team. He goes out, he speaks, he does some things, he bends a few things, he talks some more, bends a few things, talks some more, bends a few things, and has to be able to like bend a 12-inch wrench, bang, 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 and go right back to talking to the audience because humans don't have that much attention span. So if you do that and spend 30 and spend a minute catching your breath, you've lost the whole.
Yeah.
Lost all the entire momentum of the crowd. You have to go right back to speaking. And what I watched him be able to do is within one breath, go from 0 total calmness to 100% engaged.
Boom. Yeah.
That's the top end of everything flows in the right direction. And steel bending is the perfect practice for that, man, for that whole boom, 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 boom.
For sure. I love what you just said, man, because that's 100% the reason I think I'm obsessed with this. It's the reason I love to grapple. You know, it's like that singular focus. You might even be able to call it like enlightenment to some extent, you know, like it's meditation through movement. It's, you know, and there's some people that have no experience with that. I feel like I've met people that go their whole lives and can't relate to what I'm saying right now at all. You know,
I think 90% of the world will never relate to us, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, okay. I don't want to be in that 90% having experienced it. I don't want to be that because like I talk about this a lot and recently and especially in the vitality of life, the passion for life, the belief about life, those things. Like I want to do things. And I don't care if it's hard. I don't care if it's painful or whatever. I want to do things that makes me feel like I'm alive. And most of the world is walking around not alive. They're bored by everything they do. They're bored and resentful of their job and their life. And they don't do anything to make that. And they don't feel that passionate explosion of power that you feel when you bend something hard or when you lift something hard or when you get in the middle of a jiu-jitsu match or when you, you know, or lift a stone or whatever. They never feel that. And like, dude, how do you live with yourself?
Yeah.
If you, now maybe that's me being on the other side saying, holy crap, there is life here. There is the real reality of what a human in potential is supposed to be versus sitting on the couch playing the 100th hour of Call of Duty or the, you know, watching the 50th hour of Netflix in a row or I'm like, dude, and not that I'm against those things or relaxing and having fun and doing all that stuff. But like, if you're not feeling that moment of that moving meditative life moment where you really are 100% engaged and that absolute course of power of like yourself and the surrounding energy and everything throwing through your veins, like, dude, you are missing out on what life is supposed to be. And you will never be the person you could possibly be if you don't experience that to the point where you can now apply it to the other stuff. Like, that's one of the things I think is the lesson here. Is it, okay, yeah, steel bending in itself is awesome. But the life lesson behind it and the application to job, love, sex, business, money, how you deal with problems, how you toughen yourself to the rest of the stupid things in life that, you know, if your coffee was cold that morning, heat it up in the freaking microwave and stop bitching about it. You know, bend something hard so your perspective is different. Like my perspective on the fact that, you know, the checkout girl was slow at the grocery store is not quite as crazy. You know, I'm not so mad about that. So what? You know, it's not a big deal. There are so much more important things in life and so much more important things to apply what you have. So why not do something cool and learn it that way? Learn it awesome. And I think it's the same thing that old martial artists used to talk about and old surfing guys used to talk about and mountain climbers and that kind of, you know what I'm saying? That pinnacle of in the moment is where this is at.
Yeah. I mean, It reminds me of the Musashi quote, once you understand the way you see it in all things, you know, 100%. And, you know, it's also in a world we live in that's 100% dialed in your face. Like if you use social media and stuff, like even if you don't, I feel like the world is so high paced and just in your face and competitive and stuff. It's just nice to have something that gives you a break from everything. It's impossible. If you're trying to bend a bar that's beyond your capabilities or just right there, you cannot think about another thing. You have to be 100% dialed, you know? And there's no negative side effect. Of course, people can take drugs, whatever, to escape reality. But here's something that we're talking about that's positive for the most part. Maybe you'll damage your hands up a little bit or something, but, you know, that's no big deal. And it gives you that escape, you know, just for, and then the rest of the day, you're feeling great because you push past your limits.
Right. Absolutely. One of my close buddies that drives an amateur race car, and you know, they're it's a little short quarter mile tracks, but that's 100 something miles an hour around the curve, you know, 6 inches from the car in front of you. And he and I talked about that. That's that same feeling. And he's like, because he's a super intelligent human being and with a high stress job. And he's like, this is 30 minutes where nothing else exists, where I'm just doing this. And dude, there's so much involved in that and so much to be had in that. And one thing I think we miss in that and most lifting and is we actually miss the pursuit of it. So like purposely applying that when you're doing it is as much or more powerful than hitting it by accident. Like most people probably hit it the first time by accident. But when you purposely put yourself in that mindset to, I'm practicing this being that moving meditation. I'm practicing this being that moment of stillness and nothing. And however you want to describe it from whatever perspective or philosophy or whatever it is, like purposely practicing that. And something I also talk about a lot now is every time you do something like that, and steel bending, okay, is a good thing because you can do a lot of reps. A lot of guys do a lot of volume, you know, that kind of thing. So every volume, every rep you do is a chance to practice how you think. So if you practice happiness, you practice positivity, you practice those things, it becomes an automatic dial set on you that you go to all the time. You practice that moment of stillness, that moment of aliveness, that intentionally getting there, not just accidentally falling into it. Well, then you practice the ability to access it all the time, and it becomes your default setting instead of your, you know, I just happened to have a good workout today, so I feel great. No, every time I work out, I feel great because I'm going to hit that place because I've practiced it enough that this is where I automatically go. And that's so much more powerful than, and everybody does it once in a while, you know, even I still do it once in a while. If you're angry about something, you go out and tear something up. But practicing it all the time, like this is something I try to warn a lot of young guys about. And steel bending is a little different because there's a lot more going on. You got to be aroused but calm, if that makes sense, or aroused but in control.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of guys, especially young guys who lift weights, they tend to be, you know, like they're at a death metal concert and everybody's angry. But listen, if you practice that 1,000 times, guess what your mind has been conditioned to associate that with, versus if you practice calm, happy, peaceful, powerful, excited, vitality.
Yeah. Well,
you're teaching your body and your mind how to feel.
That's so cool. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's something he comes up on every show, but he listens, and he's the best. Don Cummings. Are you familiar with Don?
I'm familiar with Don.
Yeah. So Don, when Don bends, it's so serene. He's got no crazy music playing. He's not too amped up, but he, you know, he's probably the most elite bender going right now, putting the biggest stuff down. And it's like, when I spoke to him on here, he said, bending's not an aggressive, scary, angry thing for me. He's like, I love it. It makes me happy, and I'm happy when I'm doing it. So it's kind of like exactly what you're saying.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm hoping, so we haven't said anything about this or whatever, but me and Don have been talking a little bit, and you know, Don just bent that whole box of 60-pound nails. And I'm hoping to later on this year, and I'll put it out here as the first place, as a fundraiser, what I'm hoping to do, because you know, the whole world shut down and our charity normally has a couple of in-person live fundraisers. Well, we can't do that. Yep. So what I'm hoping to do is set up a thing where benders and old time strongmen and regular strongmen, anybody else who wants to play along, what I'm hoping to do is set up a live virtual event all around the world where everybody who's got a cool feat can come out and do it from their own home location, and we can put it all together in one thing so everybody can gets to come out and play, and we can, you know, work together and do some awesome stuff. And because most of us, okay, like the old time guys had kind of a stage to work from, and not that we even need it, you know, you do this, like I do what I do because it brings publicity to the things I want you to see. I want you to see being a better human being. I want you to see my books and videos. I want you to see our charity. Those are the things I care about you seeing. But I also do this as self-gratification. Like if we were never, I was doing this before we could film it. This was the same thing. This would be my, it's like Don said, this is my happy moment. This is my, you know, place to do that. But it is nice to be able to show some awesome stuff around the world on a good stage, you know, show some people and those stages have kind of evaporated in the last few years as far as where strongmen and benders could really perform in a public. So maybe that will be a cool thing. And I don't want to, Don's got something cool in mind. I'm not going to spill the beans on that.
Keep me in the loop, man. I'd like to help in whatever way I can. And that sounds really cool. I'll definitely publicize that and everything. So, while we were talking, you touched on tendon strength, and we're kind of talking a lot about the mental aspects, but, you know, there's lots of different terms. I always kind of break it down like this. In grappling, it's probably similar in football and other things, but just because someone's shredded and looks strong, it doesn't mean they feel strong, right? So, and that equates to, you know, people say functional strength, farm strength, old man strength, a lot of different terms, but for the thing that we're talking about. And that's something I certainly feel like is developed with steel bending. And absolutely, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because the type of training that you're doing day to day is 100% functional. I mean, that's what comes to mind when I see it. It's not, you're again, as Don says too, you're strong in all angles, you know, like from all angles, weird muscles. And I think especially the guys in steel bending and the periphery of that, you know, they was my guest on last week. It was important not just to be able to deadlift something, but to be able to pick up a stone in a field. You know, it's like I think these guys are all chasing that ultimate strength, that all around strength. So I'd love to hear you speak on that.
Well, I think, you know, the old time guys were super into that, and where the steel bending stuff came from. And I think steel bending really came from the idea of, I found something to show people because I'm doing a professional show. But then what I found was a deeper thing. What I found was, this is great training. Like if you look at Alexander Zoss and some of those guys who were real big benders from that era and that kind of thing, well, they were doing it as a money-making show, but they were also doing it as legit training. And I think it's that kind of training. In fact, if you hear stories from some of those guys or whatever, like a lot of the reasons they bent some of the things they bent and did some of the things they did the way they did is because they were doing traveling carnival shows 150 years ago. Okay. Yep. So 150 years ago, the average cat on the planet was a lot tougher than the average cat walking around today, especially out in the country. If you were out in the middle of Iowa somewhere with a bunch of farm boys who were lifting stones and hay bales and tossing cows and stuff every day for a living, if you did something on stage as a challenge, you better not have somebody who just can walk up out of the blue and walk up and do it.
Yeah.
You know? And I think those things came out of that, where they had to train themselves. That, like, I think that if I'll tell you one that really, like stone lifting and that kind of thing, but I'll tell you one that where you can truly see two things from the old time strongman, where you can truly see where they were scared, that not scared, but you know, they usually offered money. Okay. They usually had money involved in, like, okay, if you can duplicate this feat, you get, you know, 10 or 20 bucks, which 150 years ago was an exorbitant amount, was $500 or, you know, that kind of, that kind of thing. And Arthur Saxon and them had and his brothers had a challenge sack that was 300 pounds of flour with a dumbbell shoved inside it. So it was off balancing. Yeah. So it would balance off to one side. And supposedly they also coated the thing with baby powder. I don't know how true that is, but so that, and their challenge was anybody who could walk up and duplicate the lift that Arthur would do with the sack, you know, he would, you could win the money. Well, nobody ever took their money because they're not dumb enough to set up something you could just walk up and do.
Yeah.
Well, I forget the name of the, but that's that kind of strength, okay? The kind of strength to be able to walk up and apply that to any challenge, any, like that kind of sack lifting, steel bending. And really, that is such an That is the manipulation of an object, not the lifting of it. That is the pure conquering of an object. It is so grip intensive. It's slow grip intensive as well, if that makes sense. Like you can get to where, all right, like, I know, today, if I want to, I can bend a 60 penny in a couple of seconds and be that kind of thing. But a hard bend, nobody bends. Hard for you, whatever your, you know, moment or level at that moment is, you know, that extended, almost slow isometric isotonic movement that is grinding and is it's what it's like when you're tearing a bolt off of a car that's been there for 20 years and you got to bust it loose, or when you have to pick up an engine and walk it around, or that kind of, it's that kind of manipulation of that kind of thing. And for me, that's what I train for all the time now. It's not so much specialized to any one particular area. What I'm attempting to do is be good at absolutely every area. And I think you achieve that by, like, okay, I think there has to be a balance there. And I'll tell you a point in my life that changed my thought on that balance. Okay. So I fell into powerlifting from football. I had my first defensive line coach when I was 13 years old was a guy who played in the USFL 100 years ago. And he was also a powerlifter. And he encouraged us in that direction. And I fell into this little local gym that did powerlifting. They were literally a mile from my house. And they kind of adopted me the moment, like day or two after I walked in there and said, hey, come train with us. And I got to learn the squat, bench press, deadlift. And very quickly, I was stronger than anybody I was playing against in football. Okay. But sometime during my later high school career, during the summer, I made a few extra bucks by working with a cousin of mine who him and his dad, and they're all their people were iron workers.
All right.
Okay. And so I knew how much stronger I was than him and all of those guys in any barbell lift. You know, I could deadlift 500-600 pounds at that time in high school. I knew they wouldn't even get close, but they were doing some stuff, manipulating iron and carrying all these odd shaped pieces around and that kind of stuff. That was way harder for me than I thought it ought to be. And it drastically changed my perspective on what, okay, why not have both of these kinds of strength? Why not have, like, why aren't these barbells giving this to me exactly this way? And, but all the flip side of that is, okay, if that guy can lift that and move it around, that guy, how come he can't match me here? How come he can't? And that's what was really a shaping thing. That, and then later on, the martial arts I got into as an adult was a shaping thing for me in a perspective. And then also the strongman shows. All of those things shape my perspective into that you need barbell strength, you need odd object manipulation, steel bending type strength, you need endurance so that you don't get tired on those things. Because like if you're on a job site and you got to pick up a 200-pound steel rail in the morning, you got to pick up that 200-pound steel rail 8 hours later, you still got to be able to pick it up. It's not like you're at a gym for 45 minutes and you can deadlift 500 pounds 10 minutes in, but you can't deadlift it at the end.
Yeah.
See what I mean? It's that guy. Or when you're grappling and when you're like, you know, a real big guy, you find out that you're super dangerous for about 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And you're super not at all because you don't breathe or you don't have the endurance or that kind of thing. Grappling changed my thought on that too, because, okay, so the first time I really as an adult got into grappling with some people who were real, real experienced grapplers.
Yeah.
Well, I knew I was stronger than them by a light years, but I was not necessarily positionally stronger than them at positions that they had been doing. And later on, it occurred to me that I'll tell you somebody who showed this intimately that we never look at it this way is Hoyce Gracie.
Okay? Oh yeah.
So Hoyce in the first UFCs and all that stuff. And he's he's 185 pounds, but he's a little fella comparative to the other guy that he was beating, and he's crushing these guys. And the Gracie guys are, you know, especially from that time period, we're all like, no, we don't lift weights. We just do this and that whole thing. Okay. You don't lift weights, but if you spend 4 hours a day choking somebody in this position, you're essentially strength training this position.
Yeah.
If you spend 8 hours a day in a guard position with your legs locked around somebody, squeezing them like that, you're essentially doing 8 hours of isometrics of that. You see what I mean? You're going to be super strong in the things you practice. So that begs the question, how do we get strong at everything? How do we practice everything? And for me, the solution to that is something I push in all my books or whatever, is to find the big bang stuff for each individual thing and do enough of it to get proficient and strong at it, but not so much that it destroys your ability to get proficient and strong at the other 100 things you could get proficient and strong at. So Like I squat, but I don't do squats, leg presses, leg extensions, leg curls. But I see what I mean? Because you can squat a big weight, you can leg press a big weight, you can do leg, you can do all those other things without their use. Now, doesn't mean I don't throw them in occasionally to keep practice with other angles. It means I have one thing that really pays the bills in that particular area, and I do enough of that thing to get strong at it, but not enough to create a bunch of damage. So number one, I don't have a lot of injury or a lot of inflammation. But number two, I also have energy and time to focus on the things that it's not paying me. So you can be a massive barbell squatter and the most horrible grappler in the world because you don't have any balance, or you don't have any technical ability, or you don't have any, you don't have the right stuff. You see what I mean? You don't, it's not like that's going to automatically make you better at that. But if you do just enough, and you really don't need much. And there's a thing about that. Like I never, even in bending, once in a while, I would do some heavy volume. Like if I really wanted to push something, or if I really wanted to, a lot of times the volume for me was just an endurance feat to, a feat to conquer. Like I bent 50, 60, I bent 50, 60 penny nails one day just to see if I could do it. Or just to work, you know, worked up to it, that kind of thing, because that helps you pay off in stage shows where, like, if I can bend 50 of these in an hour or less, you know, then I can pretty much any time of the day, day or night, no matter what happens, no matter if I just stubbed my toe or, you know, had bad breakfast or whatever, I can still bend. You see what I mean? I can still do that. There's no, you've essentially conquered that feat to the point you can do it. But like on an all the time basis, I never did any of those things at that level of volume or that level of frequency. Okay. Yeah. That I did, that it did not allow me to train the other stuff that I needed to train to have the widest possible variety of those things. And whichever the thing you're lacking is the thing that will help the other stuff. So if you're big, if you can lift engine blocks all day and you're awesome at that, but you're not really great at barbell deadlifts, get better at barbell deadlifts. And you'll suddenly be better at both engine block lifting, and you'll have a stronger, or maybe you can lift really great on a barbell, but you don't do so well with a stone or an engine block or a sandbag or that kind of thing. Spend some time with a sandbag or a block or a barbell, or you know what I'm saying? Like, same as being a striker and not a grappler, but if you get better at one, you sometimes get better at the other through just the generation of all those things. And endurance is a huge thing, but I think we miss out on that and the ability to both sustain and train all that kind of training. So like, I don't really don't consider what I do to be high volume of absolutely anything, except when you look at the totality of everything I train across a 10-day spread, or when you look at the, you know, the endurance work that I do, because that's kind of high volume. But I want to hit the sweet spot of more than this isn't going to pay me a lot less, but less than this is really not going to do the job.
Right.
And the same with bending. And I'll tell you why I think about that way. Okay. Bending can be the most awesome thing in the world, can also be a little bit dangerous. I know some cats, a couple of friends of mine who've had long-term tendonitis from bending.
Yeah.
But it's all often because their training style is lots of high intensity max sets, grinding, beat on it, hammer it for 10 minutes, and then come back a few minutes later and do another one and do another one and do another one and do another. I don't think you're going to get that much stronger overall, and the only thing you might get is you might get stronger a little bit faster. And this is what I think is a problem with most weightlifting careers right now, is a lot of guys who do that kind of volume, heavy volume, intense volume, very, very frequently, they get real strong real fast for a year or two, and then they have so much pain and injury and problem that it takes years for it to undo, or maybe it never undoes. Maybe they do enough subtle damage to tendons and ligaments and that kind of thing that, like, I know some guys who, you know, they're killer benders, they're strong, but boy, do they hurt really, really, really bad for a long time after they do anything heavy. And I think that's from over volume, okay. So if it took me, say I wanted to bend a really, really hard piece, and if I hammered that volume and I got there in 3 months, or if I took 5 months and did a little less volume, but I had a lot less pain and a lot less long-term pain to get to that same spot, you know, that's a big thing. Like keeping yourself, like we should be training not only to get as strong as possible in these things, but to keep ourselves as healthy as possible.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What do you do for recovery? Are you taking days off, or like you out there just finding that sweet spot every day that which allows you to do stuff every day? Or
I'll tell you, I saw some John Wood said something like this a long time ago about asking, do you train every day? Yes, I train every day, but that doesn't mean every day is hard. So yeah. If you can count recovery as training. You know, like, okay, one day this week will be nothing but like an hour long walk. It won't be stressful. It won't be that kind of thing. Or it might be some much simpler or much less physically taxing, but more coordination based stuff or that kind of, you know what I'm saying? I try to train pretty much every day, but it's a lot of it, it's dictated by my life schedule. So in that, I use about a 10 day ish rotation to train everything I want to train.
Wow.
In that time, I want to get one heavy lift for squat, press, and pull, one heavy odd object strongman-ish type thing, one old-time strongman bending-ish type thing and that's a hard one of each of those things.
Yeah.
I want to get a couple of high-intensity short cardio sessions. I want one or two long intense cardio sessions that are 45 minutes to an hour. And then I want some recovery days where maybe I'll go out and do like one lift, but it doesn't really beat me up or tax me. And then I'll spend more time like just on the warm up or walking or stretching or that kind of thing. Or, and also by energy of the day, by whatever else I intend, you know. So if I don't feel it that day, I usually go out and start anyway and just do something. And then I allow that to dictate what I'm doing. So within that, you have to have the discipline to balance the fact that I'm going to do these heavy lifts this often, no matter what. At the same, like, I think that's the thing. Like sometimes, okay, you can't really speak badly against discipline. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But you can speak to the neurotic level of it where you don't have – most people never get to a place, okay, where they couldn't use more discipline, because if they could have more discipline, they could accomplish more. But if you hammer the crap out of yourself and you do it from this place that like, I cannot stop.
Yeah.
You have to be disciplined also in the ability to back up and say, okay, hang on, I'm hurt, or I feel this going in a bad direction. Let's do something to recover. And that's one of the great things about training a lot of different modalities, which makes it a little harder to balance. Okay, if you train with just one object in mind, nothing else matters. But if you train, and I think for life and lifetime of training, the more things you can train, the more things you can try, the more interested you stay, the more neural pathways you build, all that stuff. But also the less repetitive injury type stuff you get. If all you do is the one thing all the time, you tend to beat the crap out of that one thing to the point where you cause problems. But if you do it, even in bending, okay, like I primarily, if I'm short bending, I'm double underhand, but I'll do some reverse or, you know, some other things to create other angles, just to get different, just to make sure that there's not imbalances.
Yeah.
You know, same thing, you're gonna lever a sledgehammer and you always do it this way. Well, maybe you should be doing some, you know, both directions, or even supination, pronation stuff. You should be working all those directions to make sure over the course of lifetime of this kind of thing. Cause I want to be the guy who can still bend this at 65 and 70. Okay. I don't want to be the guy who had to quit at 40 because I beat myself because I couldn't, you know, I hammered myself on volume so hard that I cannot use my hands. We're not looking for that. We're looking for, and anything. I think most of us don't do nearly enough range of motion, stretchy type stuff.
Yeah.
Most of us don't do enough to really care for things, you know. Probably, I don't know that we. I don't know. Nutritionally, that's kind of hard to say. I think if you're getting a ton of protein, you're probably doing a lot there. And I think there's a lot more, you know, vitamins that just sort of flow with food. That's okay. But like, hydration is huge.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, especially if you live where I live, or even if you're doing bending type stuff, where you're like, dude, one of the worst things you can do is like, I'm dehydrated to the point I need an IV, and I'm going to do a max bend, or you know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's, you know, and basic recovery, you know, are you sleeping? Are you eating some good food? Are you not doing too many things that are taking away from that, from a stress or from a, you know, other substances perspective? Are you, and I also look at recovery in two ways. Okay. So I think there's basic recovery and there's long-term recovery, or there's basic inflammation and long-term inflammation. So here's what I mean by that. If you squatted today, you might be ready to squat again in 3 days. Okay. As in, you're sore for 3 days, your legs feel tired for 3 days, but on the fourth day you could go do it. You're good to go. So your basic inflammation has come, went way up and has come way down. But there's an underlying inflammation that, like, okay, maybe the subtle tissues underneath and tendons and ligaments, and maybe you're recovered enough to even have a good session, but you're not 105% recovered. And I think that's where we make a mistake, where we build up long-term inflammation, is that we get the first one. As soon as that first basic inflammation comes back to normal, we hit it again. But what we do by doing that, by not letting it truly give it some time to chill out, is we keep this, instead of where it should be here, we keep this one up here all the time. And it keeps creeping up, creeping up, creeping up. And one day that's a problem. And that's where I was talking about the guys that have, like, you know, just deadly tendonitis that never goes away.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I hate this. Like, I'm a huge believer in toughness. Okay. Cause I think most of the world is just not. And like to the point it damages their life, you know, to the point it doesn't let to the point it, you know, it doesn't. But at the same time, when you get to that tough mentality, you can over tough yourself into a dumb place that you don't need to be, where you could still accomplish that if you were slightly more patient or more planning or more, let's look at this from, I don't want to just be able to do this when I'm 40. I want to be able to do this when I'm 80.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think there's a certain, you can become sort of addicted to that sweet spot of enlightenment that we were talking about too before. I've experienced that myself, you know, because grappling, I've done it for, you know, well over 10 years, and I'm accustomed to it. So I could grapple every day of the week and be fine, you know, like maybe not competition rounds every day, but I could be fine and I could have that moving meditation. But here now I'm still a white belt at lifting weights and bending and stuff. So I tweaked my back on a deadlift, and then I wrecked my hands on a attempted horseshoe snap and stuff. And that's all chasing that moment of escape. And so I got to, you know, it's like toughness, but it's not positive in that sense. You know, it's like, I got to spread it out maybe over and find out some other things that give those things a break. And you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why I like having, and like, even for the world situation at the moment. Okay. So how many people lost what they do because their gym closed? They couldn't go grapple or they couldn't go lift.
Yeah.
Well, if you got a bigger bag of tricks to play with, then even if you lose one of them, you can still do the others. And you're dead right about that. And for us, you know, people talk about this, but most of your really big dogs are pretty, maybe not addictive is the right word, but we're pretty neurotic addictive in the things that we pursue.
Obsessive.
And obsessing, you know, and I believe that and I don't believe that, okay, in that obsession is often the word that lazy people use to describe dedicated, you know, people. You're obsessed with lifting those weights. No, I'm just, but okay, if you're obsessed with your ex-girlfriend, you're staring outside her window, that's a bad obsession. Or if you're obsessed with shooting heroin into your eyeballs, that's a problem. Yeah. But like, if your obsession is making yourself better, okay. If it obsesses you to the point where you damage yourself, not by a freak injury, but by an injury you could see coming and just kept hammering toward anyway, or by I threw my marriage away because I did nothing but go to the gym, or I skipped my kid's birthday because it was deadlift day. you got a problem. Okay. Yeah. You see what I mean? Like, if you're neurotic to that point, but at the same time, you know, and I also think we do a lot. I mentioned the addictive thing because when you mentioned that, it kind of made me think about that. Is really, we're chasing those endorphins.
Yeah.
We're chasing that endorphin high. And I think one of the things that can help that is what I talked about earlier, is conditioning yourself to have it. Because even if you don't hammer yourself.
Yeah.
You feel good because your body's conditioned to do it. See what I mean? So like, you don't have to shoot the highest dosage ever all the time. You can, and also having that wide variety of things. So you can, like, okay, with the variety of stuff that I train, I can go hard pretty much any day I want to and still get that same, you know, enlightenment feeling, or however we want to describe it, without crushing the rest of the whole thing, the whole program that's going on, or being so beat up from it that I can, you see what I mean? Unless, you know,
right.
There's a lot of, you know, and okay. And even in grappling, that's okay. I mean, how many factors or ways are there to work on in grappling? You know what I'm saying? You got basic standing going from the knee. You've got 100 different possible positions to work. You've got 100 different possible drills. You see what I mean? I mean, like, you can still work pretty hard on a regular basis and not like competition every day kind of a
Yeah.
And there's with maturity of that thing too. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Like you kind of what you meant from the white belt to an advanced belt perspective.
Right. And you're adding in cool stuff like, you know, skill development that's maybe not as much physical, more a little bit physical, but a lot of mental and focus. You know, you're doing
right.
wild shots, you know, marksmanship and the stuff with the bullwhip and some throwing knives and stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and that's people ask me that all the time. I'm like, okay, I want to be able to do all of those things at an advanced level.
Yeah.
But I don't want to necessarily train the way that a super advanced guy at that does. I want to have the basic building blocks of what it takes to do those things to be able to cross apply it to anything at any time. So, okay. Because I mastered some weightlifting and some steel bending and some strongman stuff, I feel like I developed the ability to master other things more quickly because I understand the focus necessary to do it. So I can jump from first time to pretty advanced in a lot of things pretty quickly because I'm constantly working the basic of a thing.
Yeah.
So like the basic of coordination, the basic of balance, the basic of strength, the basic of thing. Well, most people don't have any of those basics. So if they want to get to an advanced level of anything, it takes years and years and years. But if you already got a high level, now it's translating into what focuses and works it for you. And if your focus is good on anything, you can learn to do just about all that stuff. Like, okay, I want to be able to trick shoot a bow pretty close to as good as just about anybody on the planet. I don't think I am. The only thing I do different is most of my stuff has a strength bent. So like most of your pro archers can't throw a kettlebell in the air and shoot something at the same time. You know what I mean? Now I can't necessarily shoot through a tube and through, you know, blow the candles out on a birthday cake either. That kind, you know, they're special in their own way. So are your knife and axe people. So are your whip people. So are your firearms people. So are your grapplers, strongmen, Olympic lifters, you know, everybody's special in their own way.
Yeah.
But if you get solid foundations of all of those things, you can jump into pretty much anybody's court and play. You know, you may not beat the world champion at anything, but you can turn in a respectable performance. And for me, that's a bigger thrill than, you know, I mean, I had times where in my earlier career, I had specific world records that I was looking for, and I hammered that. It took me 16 years from the first day I lifted weights to they squatted 1,000 pounds, 16 years to get to that one lift.
Wow.
But post to that, I began to think about more about cross applying this to all this stuff. And, you know, people ask me that, you spend so much time. No, I really don't. A lot of the stuff you see me do, I don't spend a lot of time doing it. I just pick it up when I feel like it and do it. But it's because I understand the thing enough and I'm trying to keep all those general levels so high that I can pick it up and do it. You know right. what I mean?
I got two questions on this. One, do you think it's some understanding of the dedication it takes to be high level at one thing kind of carries over to being high level at another?
Absolutely. Like what I have told people is find the thing that you're strong at and master it. Because when you master that thing, what you have gained is the skill of mastery itself, which is that combination of focus, dedication, problem solving, what in just an innate feel for a thing. Mm-hmm. I think all of those things are part of that mastery paradigm. But once you really hammer master one particular thing, you're light years ahead on the next thing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I was so intensely focused with grappling and still am. I'm just sidelined at the moment that I said to my wife, I would literally dream about it most mm-hmm. nights of the week. Right. And when I got into bending, I had the same type of laser focus. And I, you know, some people have said I'm doing pretty well for the time that I've been bending, and I feel like I am too. And there's many nights I go to sleep and I dream about this, you know, and mm-hmm. other stuff that if I'm trying to understand something that day and, you know, like starting on a path to acquiring a new skill or a new knowledge of something, I literally dream of it at night, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think just that type of laser focus is helpful in developing skill to a high level.
Oh, I think that's a big thing. I think your subconscious works problems out on that kind of thing. I think that's why you dream about it. I think that's why your subconscious is figuring those things, is even practicing those things sometimes.
Yeah. I think on Joe Rogan, he had a dream expert on once, and he said that, like, if a pianist learns a couple notes or a sequence of notes, that they studied the brain, and they actually put reps in of that sequence, that chord progression, but it was like in triple speed or something like that when you were sleeping. So it was like actually doing it more efficient, which is really amazing. Right.
Well, because you got nothing else, you got no other focus going on at that moment.
Yeah.
Are you
experiencing that same type of endorphin rush as we were talking about with like this strength-based stuff when you're shooting a baby aspirin out of the sky and stuff? Is that a similar kind of feeling?
A lot of times, yeah. A lot of times, that's why. I'll tell you what was a paradigm shift for me with that, because I grew up as a lifter, man, and lifters don't do cardio.
Yeah.
But when I decided I had to lose 100 pounds because, like, I watched too many heavyweight guys who can't walk to the freaking mailbox without getting. And then I tried some martial arts and found out what I talked about before. You know, you're real dangerous for about 60 seconds, and then you're real not dangerous at all. I had to, most people would think about a lot of the things I do as, like, here's my main thing I'm really excited about, and this is my accessory stuff that I have to do, but I don't really care about. Nothing is an accessory to me. Everything is the same importance.
Cool.
So because it takes that same importance, it's the same rush, same kind of thing. Also, because I have this variety of that stuff, it's a constant new challenge, constant. And that's one thing for me is brain plasticity and, you know, trying to train that and keep that whole thing together so you don't, you know, forget things when you forget your name when you're, you know, 47 or that kind of thing, you know. It excites me to explore new, and excites me to build on foundations. Okay. So like, once I master a thing or once I get comfortable with it, I want to see, well, what can we do? And like, okay, if from a strength perspective, if I can carry this forward, can I carry it backward? Can I carry it sideways? Can I carry it heavier? Can I carry it longer? Can I carry it easier? Can I carry it uphill? Can I carry it downhill? Can I carry it while I drag something else? Can I carry it while I carry and drag also something else? Can I carry it on a balance beam? Can I see what I mean? There's so many. There's the basis, and then there's experiment. What can be done? And if I can shoot this, can I hit the target? And can I hit the target from further away? And can I hit it faster? And can I hit it more consistently? And can I hit it while it's moving? Or can I hit it while it's in the air? Or can I hit it, you know, while I'm doing another skill at the same time, or while I have a strength test going on at the same time, or that?
Yeah.
The people don't see that a lot in, you know, because you don't see in social media. All you see is little clips. So you see me shoot an aspirin out of the air, but what you don't see is, you know, I could shoot a target, and then I could shoot a balloon, and then I could shoot a small target, and then I could shoot a moving target, and then I could shoot a bigger target out of the air, then a smaller one, then a smaller one, then a smaller one. You know what I'm saying? I don't show every piece because nobody has time to show every piece of what they do. And the same as, you know, when you started, you could bend this and you could bend bigger, and then you bend a shorter piece of the same size, then you got a little longer, bigger, and shorter again, and that, you know what I'm saying? It's all progression. So why not? Let's see what we can do, and let's create that. And for me, I decided that, okay, like, people bust on me all the time. Like, why don't you do the power lifts? And why don't you do it? First of all, I do the kind of lifts that fit my body, because for me, that is a big thing on what I talked about as far as not damaging yourself.
Yeah.
So I do the type of squat that I both like, am safe at doing, and fits my body. I do the type of press that I like, fits my body, safe at doing. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I do those types of things, you know, whatever. I don't care. And like, if you stick me and you on a mat, you can't tell if I do powerlifting squats or Olympic squats or Anderson squats or front squats or Zerker squats or squats on a machine. Nobody can tell.
Right.
See what I mean? It's not going to work that way. You won't be able to do that. Why not do the one that fits your particular body type, regardless of what some little 12-year-old on Instagram says is the best way to squat, because, you know, he read it in a book one somewhere, and, you know, and he saw some super famous fitness model squat that way. And I mean that to say, you got to think things through and then explore as to what's the best for you. Like, I got the strongest I ever was when I took all the rules away.
Interesting.
And nothing against competing. I loved to compete. I used to love to do that. Now I'm just obsessed with exploring my own world of those things, which is why I don't really care anymore about competing in that particular way. I competed in powerlifting, strongman, Highland Games, and kettlebell lifting, different martial arts. And I loved them and enjoyed them and enjoyed the people, and it was cool. And then I wanted to explore what I want to do and what makes me happy and what fits me and what, you know, fits my life and doesn't make me have to, I don't have to adhere to anybody's date. I just do what I want to do. And it gives me such freedom to explore. And when I got that freedom, number one, I was happier. And number two, well, now I can find out what really is my personal expression, not the expression under someone else's rules.
Yeah.
So why not express under my own rules versus express, you know, that way? For me, that was an enlightening moment of, I got the strongest I ever got once I quit that and went my own way.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge help to me. And then it lets you to do, and there's so much stuff you can do. Dude, we're like, okay, I bet you found this even when you got into bending. Okay. Is like, okay, I've learned the basics of how to bend. Well, now I can bend four different ways or five different ways in short bending. And there's three, four different ways in brace bending. And there's six or seven different ways in long bar bending. And then there's scrolling, which is both abstract or specific shaped. And then there's hot roll, cold roll, rebar. And then there's horseshoes. And then there's odd bends of wrenches and hammers. And there's a million things to explore along the way of it. And the same with jiu-jitsu. And, you know, when you first learn, there's a guard. And then there's 12 different types of guards, and then there's 12 different types of offenses, and then there's, you know, I mean, there's so much to it. Why not? Like, I think that's a big thing we mess up, and I think steel bending is a great way to do this for me, personally, is what I talk about. So many people are in the gym all the time. Like, for me, being in a regular gym is like being in is like building a car in a garage. But doing things outside of that and trying what you can do, like, can I bend this? Can I pick that up? Can I shoot that out of the air? Can I do all that while it's on fire and I'm holding something else, or while I'm eating a sandwich or whatever? That's taking your car out on the road and driving it.
Yeah. You know what I'm
saying? That's taking it out. Let's see. I put this 440 Hemi in this thing. Let's see what it can do. Not, you know.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, for sure. That's true. Yeah. And maybe it just has to do with what you like, but I find that in bending, just as you said, there's so many ways to make it harder and different, you know, like if one way is not feeling good that day, then I'll switch to another style and maybe I'll just use one wrap that day or try to do it barehanded. There's just like so many avenues you can take it, and you can always, if you can do one bolt, well, can you do two bolts? Can you do three? You know, like, and it's just, I just love the like different avenues. There's just an unlimited amount of ways to make it harder. It reminds me so much of jiu-jitsu. And maybe it's just because I love these two things. I haven't found other areas that are that like open-ended, because I'm sure you could apply this to pretty much anything, you know, but these have been the two things that I find that is just like, I'll never get bored. There's always another way to make it more interesting, more hard, more challenging, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have the same deal. I just use a wider palette to paint from.
I'll probably get there too.
you probably will, because eventually you'll get through, you know, eventually you'll get to the top end of where you're going to push to for each individual thing, and you'll move on and you'll conquer that and move on and conquer that. And if you maintain this for a long time, you know, then there's lots of other stuff to explore. And like, okay. Sure. And we'll find that it's kind of like the Bruce Lee thing about that whole thing. And in that, he talked about, you know, when you're first starting, a punch is a punch and a kick is a kick. And when you're in the middle, a punch is so much more than a punch and a kick is so much more than a kick. And then when you're at the top end, it's a punch is a punch and a kick is a kick.
Yeah.
And you're back to that you're, when you start, you don't know the difference. In the middle, you see all the differences. And when you're back to, when you've mastered, you're back to the simplicity of
it. Yeah, I love that.
The thing. And you'll find that with anything you do. Because jiu-jitsu is, you know, jiu-jitsu is human chess. Yep. So there's a million, you know, people play chess their entire lives and never get tired of it because bending is a wide variety of things. And so is, you know, calisthenics is a huge variety, and weights is a huge variety, and card tearing is a dozen different, you know.
Yeah.
Every one of those things. Can you rip a deck? Can you rip a deck in fours? Can you rip a deck in eights? Can you do it behind your back? Can you do it in oven mitts? Can you do it hanging upside down? Can you do it, you know, handcuffed? Can you do, you know, that's just 8 or 10 off the top of my head.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of, you know, same thing with, you know, can you bend this? Can you bend it that way? Can you bend it easier? Can you bend, how fast can you bend it? How many of them? There's just so much to explore. And every bit of it is just, dude, we should be out having fun.
Yeah.
And making our life better. And then having that fun and being happy, making other people's lives better.
Yeah. Damn. I could talk to you all day, but so I'm going to start wrapping up. And I do this thing called the medley, and this is just a rapid fire series of questions, mostly to do with bending, some not. So what's your favorite thing to bend?
Scrolls, long bar, like 10-foot bars, and bend into abstract shapes, probably my favorite.
Awesome. What's the hardest thing to bend for you?
Middle-sized brace bending is probably the hardest one for me. I think it is for a lot of people. If you have big legs, it's you don't have a lot of fulcrum to, like when I was close to 400 pounds, it used to just destroy me to try to bend a 12-inch pipe. And I had to bend it way down on my knee instead of up on my thigh because my thigh was 35, 36 inches. So like I was pushing down on a flat surface, like there was nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Strongest bending style for you?
Short style is a double under.
Okay.
Pulling back with a long bar, pulling back, or for a show, if I was going to do it in a show, it would be actually pulling down down across my head, down on the top, pulling down that way.
Yeah. What's weakest bending style?
Double over, only because I can't – flexibility-wise, and my personal build doesn't lend itself to this right here, so I can't stay. So as soon as I hit it, I drop away from the power and end up doing all wrist.
Yeah, yeah. All right. What's something outside of bending, training, strength sports in general that you enjoy doing?
I like bourbon.
All right. There you go.
I like bourbon. I like slow dancing. I like reading.
Nice.
I was going to say long walks on the beach, but I'm not that kind of – I'm not that – I do, but that's a whole other thing.
Right on. What's the one bend that's got away?
The one what?
The one bend that's got away from you so far.
You know what? When I first started short bending, I bent up to a red nail, and I bent it almost all the way but never could quite finish it or whatever. And at that time, I had other training stuff, and I actually got real, real sore from it because I kind of overdid for a while.
Yeah.
And I just never really went back to it, so I didn't.
Gotcha. And that was double underhand?
Say it, huh?
That was double underhand on the red nail?
Double under, yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, in single pads.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Yeah, I recently learned that, I think it was Adam Glass that turned me onto this, that there's very few guys that have done the bastard in every way from Fat Bastard Barbell Company. So, you know, I can do it double overhand, but I feel like I don't really want to be on the cert page until I can reverse it and double underhand it. I feel like only
that's a huge thing, that multiple being able to bend them all in each direction. Like I can do a basic 60 in any direction, but up above, once you start getting past that, you either got to master it technically and you got to master the different, you know, this motion is very different than this motion.
So. Yeah. All right. Here's an interesting one. Who's the strongest person you know?
That's a crazy question. and that's a crazy question in the how do you define strong? How do you define?
It's up to you in this case. I've heard everything from the person's grandparents to like David Horn came up a bunch. And the, you know, just it's totally your call.
I mean, you mentioned some guys, David Horn, Don Cummings, Adam Glass are pretty freaking crazy. Mike Bruce is monster strong. Scott Weech is super strong.
Pat Fogelitis came up.
But I'm going to cheat. I'm going to actually cheat and say my son.
All right. That's a good answer.
Yeah, because he was bending stuff that was at a young, young age that was – like very, very few people were even touching. We were at a car dealership in Texas one day, screwing around, waiting on an oil change getting a tire fixed. And he bent a 6-inch octagonal cold hardened chisel.
Whew.
And it looked like just a straight V it was psychotic. I'm like, you can't even, plus the other feats and stuff they did was just ridiculous. Just he held a wall sit with a 200-pound log on his thighs for 30 minutes continuous without coming out of position, and just that kind of strength is just psychotic.
It's awesome. That is awesome. What's the best piece of advice you were ever given?
There is a God. You're not him. Be yourself. Don't be a jerk.
Right on. Simple. Good. All right. What's the funniest reaction a person has when they find out you spend your time bending things?
Well, some of them get that like Forrest Gump. Are you stupid or something? Kind of, you know, that's a pretty funny one. Kids have some of the most hilarious reactions ever because kids will think you're, you know, like superhero stuff, which is pretty funny. Oh, yeah. Like I've had little 4 or 5 year olds ask me, can you pick up my house? Those are pretty funny. Those are probably the funniest ones.
Awesome. All right. In closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
Well, geez, man, I don't know who all you had.
I've been going after it hard. So I've had a lot of people. I have a lot lined up.
Yeah. Let's see. If we're talking about steel bending and that kind of thing, let's see. Have you had Mike Margolis yet?
No.
So Michael Margolis is like 80 and bending.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I just became friends with him on Facebook actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I could pick some real strong guys, but you probably already had all the really crazy strong guys. They're probably, you know, but he would probably be an interesting perspective because he's
that would be cool.
Come to it late in life.
Yeah.
So I would say probably Mike Margolis would probably be
good one.
Mike Bruce would be a good guy. Mike Bruce is a good guy. Mike Bruce is Mike did some really different bending. You know, Mike had set a world record by having, I think, 8 5/8-inch bars bent across his throat.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some of that. That's pretty.
Mike would be a good one too.
Cool. All right. How about tips and advice for beginner benders?
Okay. If you can work with somebody who knows what they're doing, like spend 5 minutes or even spend $100 and go see somebody if they're charging, or go learn from somebody who actually is bending. Get some decent pads to start with and don't try to beat yourself into the ground because you're going to get sore as all get out the first time or two you hammer the nails. Learn some real basic accessory stuff, some wrist stuff and that kind of thing, and learn, keep the rest of your body in good shape as well. Like, don't just bend. Do some super basic strength, some super basic endurance, so you're in good shape. And don't try to do too much too fast. And just realize, get that practice and belief into what you're doing, that and it'll come to you. That's probably, for a beginner, I think that's the best.
Great, great advice. All right, where can people find you on social media, website, stuff like that?
Okay, so you can find me. Any social media I run is always under my name. I don't do fake names. So you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I probably should be on some other stuff, and I'm not, but it's all under my name, Bud Jeffries. My website is anunconventionallife.com.
All right.
That's got all my books and videos and stuff. And then our other websites are Noah's Army Official and Noah's Army Foundation and officialnoahsarmy.com. Those are our charity websites, and those are the, if you had to look at one, look at those. Those are the most important.
Right on. Awesome. And you doing any remote coaching, anything like that? I know a bunch of these guys do stuff like that.
I do. If you really want to, you could probably talk me into it. I haven't pursued it I've done quite a bit of it over the years. I just don't really pursue right now, but I actually have a couple of new books that'll be coming out pretty soon. Cool. And then, you know, maybe we'll, I think what we're going to do is, because I have a huge video library of strength stuff. And I probably am just going to reorganize that into all downloads and stuff instead of, we'll probably make some new stuff too, but that and I got some new feats of strength in mind, new crazy stuff. Hopefully that'll be, you know, exciting and interesting and,
awesome. And any events, brands, or gear, any sponsors, stuff like that you want to shout out?
Well, we're about to put our brand new line of t-shirts out. So you'll see these coming out hopefully in the next week or two. With I got 5 or 6 people set to model them and show them out or whatever. Right now they're called Apocalypse Sexy.
That's great.
I'm the guy wearing myself in my own t-shirt, which I think is just hilariously
that
crazy.
Is.
So, and the point of that is this ridiculous crap that's going on in the world right now, I thought was just hilarious. So I thought it was a prime time to like put something funny out and some cool stuff. And I thought the whole people hoarding toilet paper and overreacting, everything was so ridiculous that like, You know, it's that we had a whole zombie apocalypse of stupidity is what we had. So let's build on that from there. Got a whole series of t-shirts that are going to be coming out. As far as brands and that kind of thing, Netflix has a really great, and that's Mike's neck thing. That's great.
Okay.
And then also our charity Noah's Army, that's the big thing. That's our events. So hopefully what we mentioned before, we're going to have a whole worldwide event with different strongmen who want to come out and show their special feat. And I'm hoping to get some guys from literally all over the world to show something.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we'll get some, I'd like to get some musicians and stuff. And all of that goes to benefit our charity that's named after our son.
Yeah.
Noah, who tragically was killed 2.5 years ago in a motorcycle accident. And, but we really truly always promote organ donation and blood donation, because Noah was able to save 4 people's lives the day that he passed away. And, you're never going to regret saving somebody else's life by doing that and being positive in that. And our charity benefits first responders. We give scholarships to police and firefighters. We give them to women escaping domestic violence. We have some for children, in hospitals and that kind of stuff. And that's our focus, is helping those people. We do it usually by a charity shoot as well as a wake that we use as fundraisers. Both of those got wrecked this year because of COVID. So hopefully we'll have an online event and do all of that. And we'll have a whole series of Noah's. We have some Noah's Army shirts that are coming out as well.
Now, is that just a website or is that on social media too?
Well, that's right now. It's just our websites, and we'll probably have a separate social media account.
Okay, cool. I'll make sure that stuff goes in the description.
Awesome.
But that's it, bud. This was awesome. I really appreciate it. I had a really good time talking to you, and maybe we could do it again down the line sometime.
Absolutely, man. Hopefully I'll have some new stuff some new plot twists to share.
I love it.
New feats. I got some really interesting feats in mind. So hopefully we'll be able to do that, and it'll be all good.
We'll be watching. All right. Enjoy the rest of the night.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed it very much. Thank you again.
Thank you.